We are back. It's the second week of session, actually the first full week of session, and we saw the first committee hearings underway this week, Senator.
We did. We're actually getting to work on legislative issues faster than normal. There's a real incentive of Senate leadership and apparently of House leadership as well to try to get things moving so that we can concentrate on legislation that might be significant. Some people don't understand the legislative process is pretty rigorous and it's pretty well defined, but a lot of folks who don't try to pay a lot of attention to state government don't realize just how carefully it's laid out. And the purpose it's laid out is, of course, so that there's transparency there for the public and for my fellow legislators as well as myself. And so when a bill is filed, and we're able to pre-file bills beginning in December, but those bills, nothing actually happens to those bills until we actually come into session because there's a calendar that has to be followed. And once a bill is what we call first read or read for the first time, which at one time was actually a reading of the bill. Nowadays, it's just a distribution of the bill and a movement onto the calendar. Once that bill is read the first time, it has to just lay still until the next legislative day, at which time it can be what we call second read, which is at that point is when leadership, in the case of the Senate President Pro Tem, actually can assign that bill to a committee where it can be heard. That gives a time period for people to find out that that bill is introduced, and then it has to wait until a committee hearing, and then that committee hearing is scheduled, and that has to be advertised in time for people to be there. So all of these things are done very precisely, and they're prescribed very carefully in law or constitution. I guess we're slowed down on purpose for those. So that's why sometimes we are able to move faster if we are just careful to do as much as we can according to that calendar. This year, the President Pro Tem of the Senate has been second reading bills very quickly, and a lot of them, and assigning them to committee, so committee hearings can go ahead and start, and we have started a number of committees this week. Most of the Senate committees actually began this week.
One of the issues, and this tends to be par for the course every year, is there's usually two or three things that are laid out as priority issues, but something we've heard a lot about the end of last year into this calendar year is, revolves around what's called Real ID. Where are we with Real ID right now?
Well, that's a good question. I know a lot of my constituents have even emailed or questioned me about that because there's this threat hanging over our heads from the federal government that says if we don't conform to their Real ID requirements, then we're going to lose freedoms that we now enjoy. Back when the Real ID proposal came out of Congress in Washington, D.C., Missouri took a firm stand and said we are not going to give the federal government all the information that they want for this Real ID. It would become basically a national database with everything from visible recognition of your features, would have been certain types of photographs on your license and other things, so that the federal government, Big Brother, could have more surveillance on us than ever before. And Missourians did not like that, and so we passed legislation that said we're not going to do that. Later, we saw the Department of Revenue, even our organizations like the Highway Patrol, giving away information to the government from some of our concealed carry records and other things that, again, were promised to the people that that would not happen. That information would not be provided towards a national database, something that is, I consider, unconstitutional, and I think it is. Very careful reading of the Constitution shows you that the federal government does not have the right to have all that private information. So this is the next step the federal government has taken to say, well, in that case, you can't fly on airplanes, and you can't go on military bases, and you can't come into federal courthouses. They've backed away from much of that because Missourians are still very reluctant to allow them to have all that information. And now they're saying, well, you have another 2 years before there's a problem with planes. We've had Whiteman and Fort Leonard Wood both come out with policies that allow us to get on those bases with our driver's license and one other form of ID, which is not an onerous requirement. Whiteman, actually, there's no effect because they already required a background check before you could go on Whiteman. And so this is no change for them. Those are the things now that we're struggling with because we that are elected officials in the legislature have taken an oath to the Constitution to support that document, to support the freedoms and the protections that are identified in that document as those that God has given us and that it's government's job to protect. And so when someone just says, well, we just need to have that Real ID license so that we can travel, and there's a real reluctance there when I feel like that violates my oath that I made to my constituents to protect them if I allow the federal government to step outside those constitutional limits and begin to take information from them that they did not necessarily expressly give. So it's a struggle we'll have to continue to work with. There are folks working on legislative solutions. My personal concern is that even a legislative solution at this point is really more of a capitulation.
Speaking of the federal government, as we seem to do a lot here, there was another set of executive orders laid out in the last week or two from the president regarding Second Amendment, this case what they call the gun show loophole, and just seemingly more of the same from Capitol Hill and from the president himself.
Well, we know that this administration has been after our guns for the entire 7 years that they've been in office, and they've been pushed back each time and have lost in every one of those battles somewhere, and this is one more attempt to basically infringe on our Second Amendment rights. The impact of what the president has threatened to do with executive order is not as significant in Missouri as it might be in some states because of some of the things we already do. We already comply with much of it. The big step is the one that says, well, now every private transaction will have to get a background check. So even if it's not a sale, and so if I were to give one of my children a weapon, given what this president wants to do, then it would require a background check. If I were to die and leave a collection of weapons to my children, then there would have to be this official record of this transfer of weapons. I think more and more we're seeing the tyranny that can come out of government as we watch this administration, is that we see why our founders were so determined to protect our right to keep and bear arms, and why it is important for us to not only to protect that Second Amendment right, but also to protect the rest of those Bill of Rights, back to the real ID. You know, that's the threat. I think what we've seen in this latest attempt to, I guess, weaken our Second Amendment protected rights is hopefully the last dying gasp of this administration. And it's important for us to look at those executive orders carefully to see where they really do have impact versus whether they're more for show. And if they are having an impact, for us to take the steps that we need to take as a state to resist those. The federal government is a product of the states, not the other way around. And we have to continually remind ourselves of that and do our duties according to the oaths that we took to protect our constituents' freedoms.